Connect the Dots with Alison Rose Levy, Saturdays at noon, Eastern, on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Alison Rose Levy, and we're here every week at noon Eastern Time on Saturdays on the Progressive Radio Network. On Connect the Dots, we show the connection between your personal health and goings-on in our society, environment, social policy, and all of the broader things beyond our personal choice that impact our health. Encouraging you to take action, be citizens, stand up for the healthy food, water, air, health care, and everything that you need to have a healthy life. And we bring on the show different people that have different depths of knowledge in various areas that are actually impacting the health of citizens. So usually on this show, I begin with a segment of actions, but today, because of our actions are linked to our guest and what we're going to be talking about, so we're going to do the actions later in the show. I'm very delighted to have with me today as our guest, Bridget Shields. She is a Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania activist with Marcellus Protest.org. For people who don't know and haven't heard of this before, the Marcellus Shale, which her organization gets its name, is the area of a massive aquifer, the largest in the United States in the Northeast region, and in that rock and embedded area where the water all gathers, there is also deeply embedded within natural gas, and now oil and gas companies have set their sights there and for drilling, and they've begun drilling there as they have in many other states in the region. This is a very underregulated practice thanks to the 2005 energy bill passed by the Bush administration. So the Marcellus Shale Protest Organization is active in Pennsylvania, where drilling is now occurring, and in New York, we've had a temporary moratorium from the beginning of the year, Governor Cuomo, on any permits to begin active drilling. You know, many of the companies have already licensed, but they don't have the permission to go ahead in New York. And that was passed as an executive order in early January of this year, but it's set to elapse in just a few weeks' time. And so we'll also be talking about that because, in effect, Pennsylvania provides a coming attractions for what unfortunately could come to New York unless we're able to really put some stops on it. Bridget Shields will be sharing with us the kinds of things that go on that, you know, we're usually too busy to pay attention to. Her husband, Doug Shields, is a city councilman in Pittsburgh, which is the only city in the entire nation to pass a citywide drilling ban. Bridget, it's great to welcome you to Connect the Dots today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Alison. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Now, perhaps you can fill in our listeners a little bit. How close to the Pittsburgh area and what is the region of concern of your organization? Is it actually near the city? Is it directly north? What areas of Pennsylvania are we talking about? I know it's happening all over the place, but what's the most immediate area, you know, near you?
We have like maybe a 12-mile radius around the city where a lot of permits have been, and there is drilling as close as 30 minutes away from the city itself.
That's really close, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So is that occurring then in areas that where there's water that feeds into the city of Pittsburgh?
Yes. That's one of our main concerns right now, is not only is it near a lot of watersheds and near the rivers where we get our water, but there have also been sightings of illegal dumping of frack fluid into our rivers.
Oh, that's so very serious.
Yes.
Let's just explain a little bit you know, for our listeners, the thing is, one of the things that the industry says, and we had Carl Arnold on the show a couple of weeks back, the gas drilling industry will say kind of, you know, very innocently, wow, this has been done for 100 years. We never had a problem. But the problem is that it's actually a relatively new process of horizontal hydraulic fracturing, and that's the new process over the last decade or so that uses all these chemicals, right?
Exactly. We have had shallow wells in Pennsylvania. I think we had the first natural gas well in Pennsylvania, actually, for 60-plus years, and there has never been any kind of contamination of aquifers or the kind of air contamination that we're experiencing today. This is a whole new procedure of hydrofracking where they use a lot of carcinogenic and toxic chemicals in the process itself. And they're drilling way deeper and horizontally, which is a whole new method. So when they say, oh, we've been doing this for such a long time, it's not the same process, and it's just another lie that the industry tells us.
So how long has this been going on then in your you know, immediate area?
The most recent that I know of was in 2006 down in Washington County. That's the one that I'm most familiar with. Up in Bradford County, I'm not sure when they started drilling up there, but I know in Washington County, which is really close to Pittsburgh, it's about a 35, 40-minute drive, they started in 2006.
And so, you know, can you, I know that, you know, some of our listeners may have seen the film Gasland, which was nominated for an Academy Award this last year in the documentary category, and many others perhaps have yet to see the film. Could you kind of paint a picture for us of, you know, like, well, for one thing, what's the first step in the process is that the gas representatives, company representatives go, and they go to people that have tracts of land, and they ask to lease that land for drilling, and people sign up. Why do they sign up?
Well, I think one of the main things is this industry has taken advantage totally of the economic situation that we're in right now. You know, there's an unemployment rate all over the country, and everybody needs jobs, and that's one of the myths that they keep saying. They act like we're against, you know, creating jobs and having a boost in the economy, which everybody wants that. But they come in, they tell you, you know, they want to lease your land. They give you this idea that it's going to be clean, it's going to be safe, it's the same kind of drill that's down the street that was put in 50 years ago. And the next thing you know, there's drilling rigs all over your property. They don't tell you when they're coming. I've heard stories of people coming home from vacation with a drilling rig in their yard and not expecting it. So it's really the money that's involved, and we're finding out, isn't worth the risks that are associated with this drilling.
So, you know, before the drillers come in, the people who have leased their land, you know, are thinking, oh, well, I'm, you know, maybe I'm going to get rich here. This is really a good incentive. Maybe I'm not doing well financially. And then, you know, and then the people that maybe are concerned, their neighbors who may be concerned, well, what is going to happen in our neighborhood, in our water, to our health, to our property values? You know, you hear this kind of pro and con, you know, with some people, we want this. We're hoping we're going to make money, and other people, we don't want it. We're concerned about these things. What happens after, you know, the drilling actually begins? Is it, are the, you know, is it much less, you know, of concern than the people that were concerned at the outset were worried about? And then are the people who did it, are they happy with it? Like, what kinds of things play out when it actually comes to an area?
Well, just to go back to what you said, that's what's happening all over, is it's pitting neighbor against neighbor, sometimes family against family, where there's a lot of acreage involved in, say, an old homestead that was split up against siblings. Some of them want drilling there, some of them don't. And what's happened now, even the people that have leased, we're finding that now they are involved in lawsuits with the industry because they were completely lied to. The things that are happening on their land, they found, aren't worth any of the money, and a lot of them aren't getting a lot of money. So there are a lot of things people need to know before they lease, and then the things that happen after they lease, there's a whole list, and we have all of that information on our website of things you need to know. People are getting really sick. There are a lot of families that are really suffering right now with all kinds of really horrible illnesses. Many of them can't come forward and talk about it because they're in gag orders with the lawsuits trying to get out of their leases. So it's really been a difficult situation the whole way around, both on health assessments, both with what happens to your land. There's been a tremendous amount of land being depreciated. The value of your property becomes almost useless after the drillers come in. So there are a lot of misconceptions about this industry, and a lot of the things that the industry tells you, once you get to where the drilling is actually occurring, you could see for yourself that it's not all roses like they want you to believe.
So you actually then, because you see when people are not in the region, you know, there'll be a report, a news report, and they'll say, well, these people don't want it. They are anti-frackers, they're environmentalists or whatever they characterize them as. Then on the other hand, they'll say these other people do want it and they think it's going to bring business to the area and that's a plus. And so when it actually comes, you're saying that the people that wanted it are suddenly they're disappointed. But what they were fighting for, what they thought was going to be great, what they were arguing with their neighbors about or other family members about, it doesn't play out in the way they hoped.
The main thing is that they're not informed. They're not being informed correctly. There's no consumer protection involved when they come in. And there aren't any studies being done prior to the fact of the drillers coming in. There haven't been any environmental impact studies done to, show what's going to happen to the community when you have tons of trucks coming in and out. There's been no health risk assessment done about the air quality and the water quality. So there are a lot of unanswered questions that we have. And, you know, everybody wants a new job. There's a lot of people out there looking for jobs, and we have no problem with that, and we want the economy to boom. But in Pennsylvania particularly, we have a great tourism. We make a lot of money in tourism alone, and this is going to totally shut down that sector of our tax base. So there's just too many questions that haven't been answered, too many things that have been happening to people, to land, to air, to water, and we don't have the answers. Mm-hmm. So we need to stop what's going on right now. Just stop it until some of these questions can be answered, and then maybe pick up from there. But right now, we find that everybody keeps saying, we need this. We need this for America. We need this for energy independence. But there's so many questions that are unanswered and too many things happening that what we need to do is stop, take a look, assess what's going on. We have no data being collected with the health risks that are going on. So there's just too much at stake here for us to continue at the rate we're going.
So, you know, well, I mean, New York also has an enormous tourist economy, as well as, you know, upstate agriculture, food, you know, that we eat in the city. The farmers market food comes, you know, a lot of it comes from upstate. So those are major industries. So let's just contrast for a second in terms of hired that work on the rigs that, you know, drive the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of truckloads of waste to and fro from the fracking sites. Are these local people then who are given these jobs? Are they given jobs as first responders? You know, like where do the – for whom does the more money and the more jobs, like how does that actually play out in a community, for example?
Well, there have been some jobs created in the areas, but they're not the high-paying jobs. Most of the jobs that require knowledge about how the wells are operated are out of town, people from Texas and Oklahoma. A lot of the big rigs are also being driven by out-of-towners. We do have some minimum wage jobs for, like, security guards, that kind of thing, for the people living in that area. And, you know, I'm not going to lie and say that there aren't jobs being created. There are. They're not top-notch jobs because you have to be trained in this field. But there's a lot of jobs for lawyers right now in lawsuits.
Oh, my God. Oh dear!
That's not good news. It's not the way they want you to believe it is.
If you
come to Pennsylvania and you see these trucks that are hauling a lot of wastewater in and out and fracking fluids, they all have Texas plates on them.
Oh my! Wow.
Yeah.
So it's more like an invasion, than building up the area or something like that.
That's a good word to describe it, I think. Yeah, absolutely. An invasion of the natural gas extraction.
Yeah. And does it feel, I mean, do people express that? I mean, I'm just, colorfully saying that, but I mean, does it feel that
way
to people? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, there are just so many horror stories of, people saying, oh, I heard that my neighbor leased, and they run to the county office to find out where the leases have been permitted. And then the next thing you know, there's a bunch of trucks in your backyard with drilling rigs, and the roads are, totally jammed up with truck traffic. It's really like small, tiny country roads with these giant, trucks hauling water, hauling equipment. It's really something to see. I mean, I encourage everybody to see Gasland because it really does document exactly what's going on and what it looks like.
So that's so it's not just the neighbors who are complaining. The people themselves, they thought that they were going to continue to farm, or
exactly,
it was going to be put back together again. It was going to be fine.
Yes.
It doesn't happen that way.
They have been misled and misled. I'm sorry. They've been misled in so many different areas of this. I know that the dairy farmers close to the border in New York, they have been going around and putting on presentations because some of them did lease. They thought it was going to be their answer to, updating their farms and their equipment. And now they're either going out of business or unable to do what they were doing because of the contamination that they're experiencing. So a lot of groups up there have actually formed to go around and give full PowerPoint presentations to the rural areas, to people that are considering leasing, and just to give them every, aspect of what's involved, what questions to ask, what papers to have, what not to sign, because they have found that now what they leased out, they're unable to even use, and now their value of their property has really diminished.
Well, I know that people, I've heard people say things like, I won't care if the value of my property is diminished. I mean, it might affect the entire area or the, town, or it could affect your neighbors or relatives who live nearby, and they kind of, that is a different problem. They don't care about that because what they're picturing is that they make a fortune, and then if the land was devalued, well, they're going to be moving somewhere else, and they're happy to get out of there. They want to go. I mean, we've hit the jackpot. That's what they think is going to happen. But what you're describing is, it sounds like they didn't hit the jackpot. They still have to be there. They, in fact, do still need to, rely on their use of their property, by farming or whatever they were doing before.
Mm-hmm.
So where are all the people that hit the jackpot here? I mean, I'm just not clear about that, because that's
right.
That's the motivation I think people feel when they want to proceed with this.
Exactly. I mean, the thing the thing that you'll find is that a lot of these people, when they started signing leases, for one thing, the prices were all over the board. I mean, some people got $500 an acre, some people got $1,200 an acre. It varied. And then, you know, that created tension from neighbor to neighbor. The state government has just tossed citizens, like, under the bus. We have no consumer protection whatsoever. It's buyer beware out there. Because it's like I said, there's just no consumer protection. So you have to hire your own lawyers, test your own water, have your own air tests done, and it ends up that it's costing people money instead of people making money.
Well, you know, that's something I was going to ask because, you know, I think there's a sense, a general sense that people have, well, something like this couldn't possibly be going on because it would be regulated.
Right.
The government would know about it.
Right.
They would be seeing to the situation. And from what I've heard, you know, reported from Pennsylvania and other regions, one of the big shockers is not only, you know, this unpleasant invasion and destruction of the environment and quality of life and values and health, but also the sort of destroyed expectation somehow that that most of us feel not. I mean, this is just one among many issues, but most people would have the belief that, oh, well, so this couldn't be happening in this horrible way, possibly because the government would, of course, be there assuring that it isn't and protecting citizens, although admittedly nowadays we're not seeing that everywhere, sadly. You know, what is the situation there? I mean, are they
In Pennsylvania, the DEP, you know, all the government agencies have been cut. So they say that there are like 35 inspectors for 3,000 wells. I mean, does that make sense? No. There aren't enough at the state level. The agencies are, you know, being cut just like every other agency right now. So we don't have enough inspectors to inspect the wells. The EPA is supposedly doing a study that I think they're supposed to finish up in 2013. But in the meantime, all the drilling is continuing. They just formed a panel with the Department of Energy. It's made up of all industry people.
Who formed this department? Where was that formed?
The federal government.
This is the federal panel.
Exactly.
So
on all government levels, we're not being protected at all. I think this industry is a good example of America being held hostage by corporations. I mean, this industry, the natural gas extraction industry, is deregulated from the Clean Air, Clean Water, and Superfund Acts. You and I are have to be held more accountable than they do. If I was caught dumping a bucket of toxic chemicals into the river, I'd be arrested.
They
are not being held accountable because they're not regulated like other industries are.
Well, I mean, this was part of the deregulation, the so-called Halliburton loophole under the 2005 energy bill. So Dick Cheney, whose industry that he came from, Halliburton, which makes the cement piping that's used, was expressly involved in this. And so right prior to the real boom in this that has only come about recently, because that's only, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, he had, you know, instead of doing the precautionary principle, which is the principle that if there's any doubt or lack of study or lack of certainty about, you know, a toxic substance or practice in terms of its health or environmental impact, the precautionary principle states, you know, you don't do it until you can ascertain. You know, you better not do it. And that doesn't include things like, should I have a chamomile tea at night? You know, we're talking not about, like, controlling everything in the world and, you know, the government stepping in. That will never happen because the government doesn't have the resources to step in and monitor every single thing. You know, that. So we're not talking about low-harm substances, like if you go and pick mint from your garden or buy it at the farmer's market. We're not talking about that. We're talking about heavy synthetic chemicals that were made by chemists without any knowledge of biology or requirement to think of the biological impacts. And many of these have never been studied. Their impacts are not well characterized or known. So, you know, that's what we're talking about. Precaution would mean, you know, not using those in a volume in proximity
right.
to where people will be, you know, in products or in the natural environment, like in watersheds or, you know, other places where people will be exposed to them at a certain level. That precaution means not doing that. But in fact, what's happened is that we've had the industry has had precaution because
uh-huh.
their precaution was, let's strip away these regulations before we do
That's
this.
Right. That's exactly what
so
they
So that we're
did
not
to
accountable.
Us.
So, in fact, it's the flip of the precautionary
exactly.
principle.
Exactly. And all the politicians now are saying, we need this. It's going to be good for the country. It's going to be good for the state of Pennsylvania, but it must be done right. Well, guess what, people? It's not being done right. Everywhere it's being done, there is a problem. I mean, numerous problems, problem with health, problem with water, problem with air quality. Even the land where they're doing it is becoming toxic from fracking fluids being spilled, from containment ponds being put in just a plastic liner. And then the well explosions that we have had with, they don't even know, you can't get a straight answer. They don't know how many gallons of fracking fluid were spewed into the air and onto people's land. They don't know what caused the blowout. I mean, there are so many unanswered questions here
mm-hmm.
that it's like, you know, here, we're going to do this. Just trust us that it's going to be okay without any kind of studies being done beforehand. And
so,
that's what we're trying to do is to stop it before. A lot of this is irreversible damage. I mean, mm-hmm. we're not just talking about, you know, somebody's well being impacted. We're talking about watersheds being affected here.
And is that a possibility? Like, how is it that, how is that, could that possibly happen? How could it happen?
It is happening right now in Pittsburgh. We have the Monongahela River, which has high levels of bromides in it. A lot of it has come from illegal dumping of toxic fluids into the rivers. I mean, there are cases where they actually cited and written violations to companies for dumping this stuff into our rivers. And
mm-hmm.
right now, with the amount of rain and everything that we had during the winter,
mm-hmm.
a lot of it has been diluted. So for them, a lot of their problem to the solution is dilution.
Mm-hmm.
My fear in the summer is we usually have a drought season
mm-hmm.
where our water table goes down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to be diluted the way it has been during the winter months. And then we're going to start getting little things in our water bill saying, you know, we've already seen where they have sent statements if you're on dialysis, if you have immune compromised problems, don't drink the water.
Don't drink the water? What are you supposed to do if you don't drink the water? What does that mean?
You have to get purified bottled water. And these people are spending thousands of dollars a year buying bottled water.
Really?
I mean, yes. It's just, I mean, and here's what happens. Like in the areas where people's wells have been contaminated, the industry will say, well, okay, we'll bring you a water buffalo, but you can't go out and talk about this. So you're going to see the landscape is dotted with this new species of buffalo. They're big plastic white water buffaloes.
Hmm.
And in the wintertime, they have to spend like up to $300 or $400 a month on their heating bills to heat them so they don't freeze.
Wow.
Then there's a problem with people who have had this water contamination and don't drink it. If you bathe in it and breathe in the fumes, it's very dangerous to your respiratory system. And we have people now that are having really bad respiratory problems, not only from the air contamination, but from their water source. And it's like... This is America. This isn't a third world country. You know, you expect to have clean, safe water. You expect to be able to breathe the air. But especially the children, you know, a lot of the tests that are done, they do it on a range for an adult. They don't realize that children's bodies are so much smaller and they're so much more easily interrupted by these chemical imbalances than adults are. So there are a lot of things that people aren't looking at because there hasn't even been any data collected. I mean, that's how lax this whole industry is. For the longest time, we didn't even know what chemicals they were using. So doctors wouldn't even know what to test for. Mm. Now, finally, we're getting disclosure of the chemicals that are being used so that, you know, we know what to treat for.
Yeah, that's a new development. We're going to have to go to a break here, but, you know, this is very sobering information. We're going to be continuing the conversation with Bridget Shields of the Marcellus Shale Protest Organization in Pennsylvania after our break on Connect the Dots. And I'm Allison Rose Levy. Please stay with us for the second half of the show.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Dr. Peter Bregan, author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness. Listen to my newly syndicated talk show, The Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, and find out why they call me the conscience of psychiatry. Hear my cutting-edge guests expose the dangers of conventional psychiatric diagnosis, drugs, and shock treatment. Learn about better ways, better therapeutic and spiritual approaches to healing ourselves and to making the most of our lives in a responsible, loving, and creative manner. Make your life turn out the way you want. Join me every 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live or on the archive at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Philosophy Talk is changing to a new time every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Ken Taylor and John Perry discuss both contemporary and classical philosophical theories and apply it to problems we face every day with a lighthearted and laugh-out-loud approach. Philosophy Talk every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Why should you be listening to the Progressive Radio Network? Here are a few hosts that call PRN home. Award-winning investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker Michael Ruper. Acclaimed theoretical physicist Michio Kaku. Notable media critic and international journalist, the news dissector, Danny Schechter. Leading progressive journalists such as Stephen Ledman, John Rappaport, and Glenn Ford have also found a home with us. We also have advice from Richard Martin on how to protect yourself from the ongoing financial collapse. John Mueller tells us his firsthand account on moving out of the U.S. and making a new life for himself in another country on his show, The Expat Files. Along with all these informative programs, we also have health shows hosted by America's top doctors like Mayor Eisenstein, Cheryl Selman, and, of course, Gary Null. The Progressive Radio Network is the place for news and information.
All women, are you looking for truthful answers to help you safely and naturally navigate the many hormonal challenges that you face during your lifetime? This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, author, psychotherapist, writer, and women's health advocate. Join me entering into the Women's Healing Circle, a weekly call-in show with the holistic practitioners, authors, researchers, and wise elders who share truthful information education, and wisdom. Join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to enter the Women's Healing Circle right here on Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, health journalist for 20-plus years, Huffington Post blogger, and the host of the website healthjournalistblog.com. I've been reporting on health from the personal aspect, what we can all do to empower ourselves to improve our health. And I did that for several decades, counseled that, and have a very wide knowledge of various kinds of health concerns, health science, and health empowerment. But over time, we are seeing more and more illness, despite the fact that so many people are doing kind of health-seeking behavior and have come to recognize that the social forces that impact our health are really the next generation of health activism and health awareness and empowerment. And in light of that, the show Connect the Dots, which brings you all of the different things that are going on that impact health. Our topic on today's show is hydraulic fracturing, fracking, gas drilling, a relatively new process in the long history of gas drilling that uses up to 600 different kinds of chemicals, many of which are highly toxic, well-characterized carcinogens and neurotoxins that unfortunately, even in small dilution, can produce effects through a recently researched phenomenon called endocrine disruption. Giving a little lecture here, because our basic toxicology model has always been, you know, how much of this can you take? Well, this amount will kill you. Scientists are looking, and the research is not yet all in, but they're seeing, and we're seeing in the population, health impacts at very tiny, minute, you know, one part per million dilutions can actually, in a sensitive individual or in a developing fetus or a baby or a child, can actually turn on and off the different signals within the body. So it's not that it kills you outright when you drank that cup of water. If you drank a cup of really severely poisoned water, it might do that. But when it flows into the aquifers and distant streams and lakes and the water supply, these tiny dilutions, you know, can turn on and off different bodily functions at the, you know, wrong time or in the wrong way. And that's how health impacts are created. So it's not just, oh, we flushed it down the toilet, it went away. If it goes into the water supply, it didn't go away, it recirculates. And so we're talking on today's show with Bridget Shields, who's a Pittsburgh-based activist with Marcellus Shale Protest.org, who's been filling us in on the goings-on around the Pittsburgh area in the state of Pennsylvania, which is really the preview of the movie that will play in New York if we don't get a handle on making sure this is very well studied and safe we proceed. And with that, I will kind of convey some actions that can be taken. For people who would like to follow what's going on in Pittsburgh and contribute, they can donate, you can take action, you can learn more. You can go to Bridget Shields' group that she works with, which is, and it's not her personal group, this is a grassroots community group that you know, you take action with, right, Bridget? It's not your personal group.
That's correct.
It's called Marcellus Shale Protest, and let me spell
it's
Marcellus
for Marcellus you. Marcellus Protest.
Marcellus Protest. Yes, mm-hmm. That's what the website is. That's right.
Right.
So that's Marcellus Protest. So .org, and you can go there for information, videos, current coverage, and you know, a contribution is would also be welcome.
That's right.
Because there's
Thank
a lot of going. On. I mean, we were talking in the last segment about how the people who are really getting jobs out of this whole situation are the lawyers. So that's not what you want to hear. You know, that's where the money is flowing toward lawyers to sort of solve some of these problems. So that's one place you can go. There's also a very urgent action that I have to mention in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
The New York State, at the Atlantic chapter of the National Sierra Club is promoting this action because we just have, if you're hearing this show live, just a couple more days, because Monday is the last day that the New York State Senate can ratify a continuing of the moratorium on fracking, which otherwise will elapse in July. And it was passed as an executive order by the governor earlier this year. The assembly has voted to continue it so that we can not make the same mistakes, so that we can be precautionary in New York, so that we can study the environmental and health impacts of, and business and economic impacts, and, you know, the full impacts of this practice here in New York. But it was great that the assembly passed it. But if the state senate does not pass it, if the governor doesn't sign it, then drilling could begin here quite soon, and we could be beginning the sad process of living out what we're hearing about here. So I urge listeners, you can go very easily to my website, which is healthjournalistblog.com, and I have put up an action right there where you got the link to both these two websites, to the Sierra Club New York action, to the Marcellus Protest Pennsylvania group. And, you know, and please do, this is a timely, timely thing. You'll be, you know, whatever you're doing for your health, this is probably the single most important thing that you do today and this weekend. So let's go back to the conversation with Bridget Shields. And it's really, really, it's really quite amazing what's going on there. You know, how, like when we're talking about, you know, toxic overflow, one of the points that you were making that I thought was really interesting in the last segment was you said that, you know, there's this hope that the dilution, you know, will, uh-huh, that these chemicals will be carried away by the water, and when there's flooding, they just will go bye-bye, and it will be so,
right,
that there won't be a problem. But then you, and I pointed out that there can be a problem. In effect, when they flood, they go far and wide, you know,
right,
they don't just stay right where they were. The flooding will carry them to other areas. And then what you were pointing out is that when the drought comes in the summer,
mm-hmm,
then they become more concentrated. So in effect, this is almost like a worst case scenario for,
right, and the industry
spreading.
The industry will continue to tell us that there hasn't been one proven case of water contamination in the Marcellus. Well, Duke University published Proceedings of Natural Academy of Science on May 9th, they revealed that methane concentrations in drinking water were much higher if the homeowner was near an active gas well. The research discovered methane in 51 of 60 wells. This was determined to be natural gas from the Marcellus Shale rather than more freshly produced methane. This marks the first time that drinking water contamination has been definitely linked to fracking. Concentrations were 17 times higher to those drinking water wells within 1 kilometer of an actual active gas well than those further away. So what we have here is finally documented evidence that, yes, it is dangerous. Is it safe? I don't think so. Marcellus Shale Drillers in Pennsylvania, just in this year alone, I think they drilled 515 wells, and they had like 480 violations already. And these aren't just traffic speeding violations. These are serious things. So that's 93% that they're finding problems with the wells. The violations involving health and safety impact, there were 270. And this is what, the seventh month of the year already? That's a 52% chance of accidents involving the environment and health and safety.
That's very serious.
Yes, it's very serious. I mean,
and the myth was, oh, you have something in your water. It came from your soap detergent, or it's naturally occurring everywhere. Well, it's naturally occurring maybe, but it's buried before they dug it up. Is that the problem? I mean, so in other words, it's not just that it naturally occurred suddenly in this situation after they drilled, but we don't know how.
Right. A lot of it, I mean, you know, Pennsylvania has had a lot of coal mining, and we have, and they say a lot of it is acid mine drainage, you know. But now with the Duke study, it's been proven. I mean, we have documented evidence. And if you go to the Cornell and go to Dr. Ingrafia's reports, I mean, he lays it right out there for us. This is really serious, not just for Pennsylvania, but for New York. I mean, your watershed can be totally compromised. It's the cleanest natural water that we have in the country. And people don't realize how dangerous this is for our drinking water.
I mean, in fact, you know, the other thing, Bridget, is that there are other regions of the country where there's a lot of agriculture done, and that water is trucked in. You know, that's trugged in. So if the New York water, what happens with the fracking is when the water is mixed with all these chemicals, there's really no way to clean it up again. So it's just got to be removed from the whole system. So the companies are taking, you know, for free, they're actually taking, you know, millions, really, of gallons of water and removing them where they will never come back to our system. So and they're not taxed for doing it. They don't pay to do it. Are they
taxed?
Right,
and that's another problem that we're facing. Like, our governor doesn't want to put a severance tax on them, which, you know what, I'm fine with that. I don't want them to be taxed. I don't want a severance tax. Mm-hmm. I don't even want stricter regulations. I want them to stop, because if we collect a severance tax, then it will be like, okay, how much do we charge you to poison us? I mean, it's really ridiculous, because, like you said, these are salts that collect. They are not treatable. There hasn't been a water treatment facility able to treat this fluid, is what I call it. I don't even call it water anymore. It's fracking fluid. And now the industry is saying that they're recycling 99% of it. Well, their recycling method is putting it into an 8-acre open frack pond. On these people's properties, you'll see these gigantic frack ponds that just have a plastic liner, and they look like lakes, but they have this toxic chemical in them. The birds drink from it. The deer drink from it. That's how we've been finding all these dead carcasses all over the forest in Pennsylvania.
Really?
And when it rains and we have flooding, well, they overflow and flood just like every other lake and river does. And that's their form of recycling. There's no cover on them. There's no fence around them. They're just these open, gigantic frack pits.
Well, and doesn't the stuff then, I mean, wouldn't it evaporate into the air and all of that as well?
Some of it does evaporate. Some of that evaporation process does happen. It goes into the air. The air quality problems that we're noticing are mostly coming from the compressor stations, where they are using compressors to pump this stuff. And those are releases of all kinds of toxic chemicals into the air, and people have been, a lot of the people that live near the fracking have, their children have really nosebleeds, they're having really bad respiratory problems. And I just want to read you this one thing. This woman in Bradford County, where the last accident happened last month in April in Pennsylvania, she had some blood tests done, and after the blood tests and the research, they found that I had extreme levels of barium in my body at a range.
This is a letter from the woman.
Right, 110 normal range, where 0 or less than 10 is normal. When barium accumulates in the body, it usually affects the functions of the nervous system. And it displays all these symptoms that so many people are experiencing now. Muscle weakness and tremors, They're having difficult breathing, stomach irritations, anxiety, cardiac irregularities. I mean, there are too many people experiencing the same things for it to not be connected. And mm-hmm. it's like your show. It's like connect the dots, people. It's pretty much right there, right in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think the effects of barium toxicity at a level that you're describing are it's not something that is routinely treated or that we look into that much because it's not really it's not that common for people
right.
to have this kind of problem.
And this is what we're finding. A lot of the people that are going to the doctors with, I mean, you know, muscle weakness and tremors, that's a pretty, you know, that could be anything. And then when you do a blood test, they don't know to test for barium because who tests for barium? So now we're hoping to start getting some data accumulated, and we really need the health community to get on board with this because I think if doctors start to come out and speaking up against this, people, for some reason, they trust doctors. They would rather hear it come from a doctor than from a politician.
Mm-hmm.
So I think once we educate the medical community of what to look for, then they'll be doing, you know, more testing to look for these specific chemicals. And when they find these chemical imbalances in people, maybe then they'll start doing more research and trying to get to the bottom of it. Because right now, a lot of these people are just suffering, and they feel like nobody out there is going to help them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, conducting these kinds of tests, I mean, you know, we're in a time of, you know, shrinking health insurance coverage. And so we're not talking. I mean, we're having a whole battle about rising health care costs and who's going to carry them and who's going to cover them. And so now we're talking about novel testing, unusual tests that
mm-hmm.
are not routinely
expensive.
Done, that, you know, can be prohibitively expensive, both
right.
for communities and, you know, for individuals and families who are already, you know, under duress with this whole situation. So it's a very, you know, no one's rushing in to compensate or pick up the tab for that, you know, if there's a problem. Instead, there's just, you know, oh, well, we know we didn't cause it kind of thing. The other thing that you're pointing out, Bridget, is that with this flooding and everything, it's not just a situation where, you know, someone in the neighborhood built a well and you're nearby and it's too bad and you're right there. With
right.
with flooding and rain and streams and water, you know, this is how water
mm-hmm.
moves. It doesn't just, you know, it's not like a picket fence. It's planted
right.
in the ground and it doesn't go anywhere, you know. So this could all, I mean, it's really up for grabs where any of this goes. And there's not a program of testing to look for it or track any of it or, you know, it's not that well-known
and
predictable, isn't
it? There's so many problems with it all the way around. The EMS workers aren't trained to handle these kind of accidents. The firefighters don't know what to do when these explosions occur. They have to bring crews from out of town. There are cases of workers being extremely poisoned by this stuff, and it's not being reported because they just take them back to the state they came from, and so Pennsylvania doesn't hear about what happened to them or what caused their illness. It's
mm-hmm.
it's really, this whole process, this whole industry is very dangerous. And if we don't rise up and do something about it really soon, I'm afraid that it is, to me, this is the most important environmental issue we are facing today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people need to realize the importance and stop taking for granted every time you turn on your tap that you have clean water to drink, and when you step out, you don't have to wear a gas mask. Because in the areas where I've been, where these people live, if you step out of your car and breathe, in 15 minutes you get this metallic taste in your mouth. You get a really bad headache, and then you become very nauseous. And this is what they're living with because they can't sell their house. Who's going to buy a house that doesn't have clean water? And you can't breathe the air. So a lot of these families are actually just leaving their homes. They don't have, they can't, they're not, they stop paying their mortgages and just walk away from everything they spent their lives building. I have two families right now that just picked up and left because their kids were so sick.
And, I mean, they're lucky to have any wherewithal to even go anywhere, right? I mean, where do they go, you know, under such circumstances?
Right.
I mean, that's really, you know, that's terrible. I mean, that's just, and the children become ill, too.
The children don't only become ill. The last report that I had from my really good friend who lives out there, they found such high levels of methane, arsenic, barium in their bloodstream. And another chemical that I don't really know offhand, but the doctor said it has genetic mutations to it where it can cause birth defects down the road. So this is the future that they have to look forward to after doing something that this industry and now the government is telling us is going to be so good for us. You know, how many, there's so many wells. The industry estimates 50 to 60,000 wells to be drilled in Pennsylvania. I mean, right now I think there's 3,000 that are operating, and at a 93% accident rate, we're in big trouble. And that's going to affect New York. I mean, it's going to affect New York. It's going to affect Ohio, Maryland. West Virginia has their problems down there with drilling. I mean, it's a mess down there.
So this is really, we're going to have to wrap up here, but, you know, you're really giving us a close-up picture of what happens in a region that's really, it's happening in a wide picture, in a panorama. It's happening in a lot of places, but because of the concentration there, you're really able to give us a really complete portrait of, we're playing with fire. You know, the scene from, Gasland where he turns on the tap and then can light the water on fire because the gas is coming through the system and it's in the water and it lights on fire. You know, we're sacrificing water and we're playing with fire. So it's really serious. I want to thank you, Bridget, for being
and
with
I
us today.
This is just to go to their local officials and tell their townspeople and supervisors to really take a closer look at this before they allow any more permitting to go on.
Yes, and go to MarcellusProtest.org and HealthJournalistBlog.com for actions in Pennsylvania and New York. Get active, sign up, be heard, participate. This is our future and our children's future that we're talking about. Thank you
and
again,
thank
Bridget
you,
Shields.
Thank you, Allison, for your reporting, and we really appreciate all the help that you've given us, and keep doing such the great work that you are doing.
Well, thank you. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and this is Connect the Dots on the Progressive Radio Network. We're here every Saturday at noon Eastern Time. Please tune in and stay with us. If you want to hear about upcoming shows, subscribe to my e-zine at HealthJournalistBlog.com. See you next week.